गणपति गुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नुतिभिः सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः। So good morning and welcome to our continued class in the ashram in Uttarkashi that I don't think any of you have come yet, but that you'll come and see our Swami Premananji there. I remember some years ago, because I've been going 12, 13 years every year pretty much. So then beforehand then Swami Premananji didn't have any classes or anything. He was just... There was morning prayers, evening prayers, and that's it. You can go talk to him or anything, but he didn't have anything. Some sadhu, somebody came and gave him this four-volume book on the Yoga Vasishtha. It has the Sanskrit, and then very elaborate in Hindi. So he does it all in Hindi, and then in English as needed, depending how many non-Hindi-speaking people are there. He sees more of us whiteys, and then and then he will speak more English. If I'm the only one, then no. You ask me if you don't understand, so that to make sure that I can try to follow the Hindi. But in any case, so he brought, and then he started Yoga Vasishtha every day. And he continues. It's going on for 8 years, 9 years, 10 years. He says, as long as his confusion will continue. So Vedanta study, one has to churn. As long as there is confusion, not clarity, we have to go to the Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam has to continue. This is how it's done. And what happens is how it's usually done. Once I have the information, I can be using it to churn. But when I'm trying to get it, then I need some source, some way to look at it. They say just like the mirror, you need a mirror in order to see yourself. So the text is like the mirror, any text on Vedanta, the idea of it, it's like a mirror in order to see yourself, see clearly. And what happens is, probably my guess is for very fine things, somebody wants a more refined mirror, you know, just to comb my hair is one thing, but maybe somebody that's doing something very special, particular, maybe for certain beauticians, maybe for something for health matter to look closer. You want a more refined mirror, you want to look closely. But so that's why Vedanta, the thing is, you know, very refined mirror, we can say, so in order to look and see ourselves. So any text Vedanta we take up is for that reason. For that reason, of course, there are different ones, more introductory, more focusing on a certain angle, these types of things we have. But again, in the end, that's what it is. What it is for. So today I just wanted to give more of an introduction to a little bit about the study, that some of you have some more experience than others coming for some time, and about the text that we're going to be taking up this time, like this. This is what I wanted to do. One thing before I give all that introduction is some of you have been coming here regularly, see each other, know each other, some not. So I'd like each person just say a few words, you know, introduce yourself and why you're coming to this class. What makes you come to Vedanta class, you know, like this. So I'm just going to go in the order the people appear on my screen. That's the easiest way. So Steffi and John are in the top there. So we're going to ask them just to say a few words. Each of you say a few words.
Hello. So for me, to put it into words just right off the bat is a little tricky, but you know, understanding that that I'm not who I think I am is really at the heart of why I'm here. You know, the connection with consciousness, universal consciousness. So for maybe I should give an example, I think is the best way. You know, we run our own business and it's very stressful, and so there's times when I wake up in the middle of the night, you know, stressed, you know, and it's in those moments where this practice really helps me the most. It's where, you know, I can just kind of remind myself that, you know, that this is just an illusion, and the stress that I'm feeling is really not important in the grand scheme of things, and just try and, you know, connect with the bigger picture. And that, I think I'm just kind of in the infancy, even though we've been doing this for quite some time, of really understanding, you know, the real magnitude of that and how important it is.
Oh, very nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Steffi?
For me, it's, you know, to find the, to be able to center myself and my life. I have never been a very spiritual person. And this is, even though we have been doing this for quite some time, this is finally steering me in the right direction. And I enjoy I enjoy this conversation, and I enjoy learning to go deep in my thoughts, deep in myself, and to discover every day that I'm part of something bigger than this little self. Mm-hmm. And I think it's helping me also coming to terms with death. That is, it's always been one of my biggest fears. And that's it. And that, by the way, I'm Steffi, for who don't know me. And it has helped me a lot, mm-hmm. both emotionally and for the yoga portion, also physically.
Mm, very nice. Thank you. And Shaila? It's funny, I look at the screen, I'm looking at somebody, but then in my mind, I'm looking at them, but how can they know I'm looking at them? And not...
Okay. First of all, thank you for, you know, giving this knowledge. I'm very thankful to have found you. And me growing up, as a child, I always had this kind of environment in the house. There are, you know, some swamis coming into the house, staying, and, you know, my mom is very spiritual. And that is my background. And that time, although I did not pay much attention to it. And when I moved to US, I mean, that piece was probably lacking in my life. And I always wanted to, you know, understand and have more knowledge about it. And when I found you, I started the course to understand more about spiritualism. But now it is more that the connection that I have built with the guru. I feel that I have found the guru, a lineage, mm-hmm. where I can hold on strongly.
Mm-hmm. Very
so
nice.
It's more than, that gives me more strength than knowledge is also there, but this gives me much more, you know, strength.
Mm-hmm. Very nice, thank you. Mm-hmm. And Shruti, you can share why you come for class.
it's so freeing, the knowledge is so freeing, and I am definitely a much happier person from what I was 3 to 4 years ago. So more you learn, the more freedom you get, and even every little freedom counts. So,
very nice, thank you. And April, she came for class here for a little while, then she had moved to the Northeast, right? To the East Coast, but now, thanks to our online class, she can be with us. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. Hello. Yes, so my name is April, and I started in the class in Fremont, and then I moved to the East Coast, so I felt a little uncertain about how I was going to continue studying, and I hadn't found a teacher or a class on the East Coast, and I had continued to be in touch with Gajananam a couple of times and just hoping that that I would find the path again. So I am very grateful to have this opportunity to continue studying online. And like many of you have said, it's just helpful really in every aspect of life, and to have a guide along the way and a group to study with is also very helpful rather than just reading on my own or something. It's just definitely not the same. So
thank you April. And Saraswati?
Hey, namaste. Hello, everyone. I'm Saraswati. I go by Sara as well. So I was very, very glad to find Gajananamji here in Fremont because it takes me back to my lineage, you know. So I grew up in a very spiritual background in my house as well, my schools as well. All the schools that I went to, we had shloka classes, meditation classes and everything. Our school outings used to be to ashrams, and I've been to many, many ashrams in South India. Mm. So to find some school like that here in Fremont and Bay Area was like, you know, something very good. And I pulled my children in. Gajananamji knows that, you know, my both sons, Sid and Rishabh, they both have been attending. So it kind of gives them, you know, a way to ground themselves, center themselves. And they both are in college now. My older one has graduated. But before they leave home and into the bigger world, they know where to go back to, what their roots are, and how they could ground themselves when, you know, things don't go, you know, instead of going to a wrong path. So that is one. And for me personally, coming to Vedanta class, it's kind of mixing both the meditation that we learned with Gajananji and these spiritual, you know, the text and the scriptures, which takes us back to how do you see situations and how can you control yourself? Because, you know, over the years I've learned, like, you cannot control others, but you can control what you can do about situations. So I think it is like, and I'm trying to bring my children along with me in this particular thing, so they also learn and they are able to conduct themselves better and have a good life of future. So it's more about knowing oneself, controlling oneself, and controlling one's reactions to situations. So yeah, that's primarily it.
Very nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And last, Rupa. Rupa's been in our Thursday night class. So.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. So, yeah, I am Rupa. I'm sorry I'm not able to keep my camera on today, but definitely it will be on from next class on. I am a TTC, Shivananda TTC graduate. So for me, yoga was an exercise when I initially started. I didn't know much about it. But from there, I started enjoying it so much. And then we moved to the Bay Area and, you know, life just got busy. I continued practicing, but was very erratic, not too continuous. And then I think life just plans its own journey. Then this lockdown started and I was looking for some online something and Gajananamji's popped up. So this is my first experience with Vedanta, actually. I've done Panchadasi, like I am doing the Panchadasi course with him, but I've never formally learned Vedanta, so to speak of. But I have always been very curious. So we do, you know, I'm an Indian, obviously, so a lot of religious and spiritual, we go back to shlokas. So I've always been interested in it. It kind of makes me think, rather. So, you know, I've always been thinking about stuff. Now, with Gajananamji, I just feel like my thoughts are getting a direction. I'm understanding very, very little bit. I'm sure it's the tip of the iceberg because there's emotion out there and I'm just trying to grasp stuff. But I'm really liking what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it so much. It's like unbelievable. It gives me a lot of peace. When I'm not busy, some reason my brain goes back to what he would have taught me in some class and I would be comparing that scenario, what he had said, to what is right now being happening or something. So I think it gives me that perspective. So yeah, it's definitely changing my thought process, and I can feel it. In the last 3 months, I can feel it so so immensely that I can't wait to continue this journey and be with him and learn a lot more. So thank you, Gajanandji, for bringing this into my life.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So one thing about this, the way this teaching is passed on, like what April was saying about from reading in this, it's much harder to get this knowledge from a book. That's why traditionally it's Sharavanam, you hear it, that's traditionally. And most of the texts you'll find, like Gita, many of the Upanishads, many of the texts, if you take the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, then Lord Shiva is teaching Parvati. You know, she falls asleep because she's not interested. You know, you tell your spouse, you'll take Vedanta class and your spouse isn't interested, you'll tell them they'll fall asleep, right? But somebody else, some fish, was there hearing intently. So he taught the fish, right? Gave him a human body and he became first Hatha Yogi, the Matsyanath. Like, that's why Matsyendranath, like this. So in any case, so it's passed like this. And a term that's given for this, for that it's passed on, is sampradaya. Like this, sampradaya, like sampradaya. Sampradaya, is it visible enough? The red is strong enough? Yeah. So, sampradaya, people take it as lineage in general, but directly it's samyak. What is given very, you know, complete and well. This is what it is. And so literally, those who, in one of the other classes, it comes from the Tattvabodha, I believe is where we saw it. But in any case, where you talk about Sadguru there, where there, the idea, at least from how I've learned in this from Sadguru, means the teachings are already there. You know, what we're going to talk about now, about how we're talking, well, the introduction bit Vedas and Upanishads, the teachings are there. It's not that a person is going and putting it together. It's not like that somebody builds some sort of mechanism and then shows somebody else, but it's the knowledge is there and taught. So when it's taught, actually, it's given in a very complete way. This is what is said about that it's complete. It gives a very good complete picture. So it's passed down. So then the only way to pass it on is the same way. If we tinker with it, it's kind of like maybe one idea about it is genetic engineering. Unless they really know what it is, there'll be side effects. They don't know what's going to happen, right? Because somebody designed it. We can say Ishwara designed it, or if you want to say nature designed, however you want to say. But let's say Ishwara designed. Unless I really know, I'm going to tinker, and who knows what'll happen. Because the things they've done, they've tried to tinker with, you know, unfortunately, some livestock, so they maybe grow bigger, but then they have some other physical problem. So the thing is then, the Vedanta teacher, the idea, of course, one has to first study and know and live up to best as they can, but then also has to step out of the way when passing it on, because otherwise it gets tinged by our own ideas like this. And so literally, I've heard my teacher, my guru say, I've heard other teachers say, and it's really so. The things that come through that really are, you know, the real are life-changing, this, because those are the teachings. And the things that don't come across as clearly or, you know, taking a little off, that's because of the instrument that isn't perfected, because of the teacher that also has isn't perfected like this. So literally, that's how it is. It's passed on like that. Now, very interesting, my guru, he learned from Swami Shivananda, Swami Vishwanandaji. He also had a Hatha Yoga guru. So he also belongs to a Hatha Yoga lineage, which we know very little about is Hatha Yoga guru, but he would go and study with him. So similarly, there were other brother disciples that studied with Swami Shivananda. And, you know, just like him, with Swami Shivananda's permission, they went and studied Vedanta. Some of them went to Swami Tapovan. Swami Tapovan was in Uttarakashi at the time. When you come there, I can show you where he'd stayed. Now, Chinmaya Mission has the place where he used to stay, the Kutiri used to live in. And so they went and studied with him because they wanted to study Vedanta, what the scriptures, and that, you know, they needed somebody who's from that type of lineage, with Swami Shivananda wasn't from that type of lineage. So, of course, Swami Chinmayanandaji is the best known, but there are many that came and learned with him. So interestingly, I ended up in a similar path like this because I come from Shivananda lineage, but then I got to Swami Dayananda's lineage in Vedanta study because similar thing of wanting to get know this. You know, you have your, you know, that I have my guru, but to study Vedanta, I need this, you know, needed to go to a place where this is being taught. So interestingly, this is how it happened. But in any case, so when we study Vedanta, then we want to go more to the source of where it came from. This is what we're doing in this course, because when we study it, usually first we study Prakarana Granthas. Prakarana Granthas will be texts that give either a certain overview of what Vedanta is, what it's talking about, and that Tattva Bodh that we gave is a very, very good introductory text that gives a nice structure so we just understand what is the main thing it's talking about like this. Just giving like a bare-bone structure. That's what it does. And then there are ones that deal with specific angles, because what happens, the Upanishads can be quite terse and they only say so much. And one of the reasons is, you know, it's there, and then, you know, the person that knows expands on it and gives you more information about it, because for whatever reason, that's just how it is. So they'll expand on certain aspects, like the Dridhisya Viveka we just finished on Sundays. That took that one angle and really expanded on it, where if you go to the Upanishads, you'll find a few small things here and there, but not as detailed as Dridhisya Viveka, which really expanded on it to clarify that very much, that whole vision of I'm the observer, everything else is observed, body, mind included, like this. Really went in detail. So certain ones like this, or certain ones will just expand on a lot of Upanishad teachings like we're doing in our Panchadashi. So like this. But the original texts are the Upanishads, the original texts on Vedanta. So everything really in the end points back to there. If you take the Bhagavad Gita, certain verses are taken almost word for word from Kathopanishad. A lot of ideas Kathopanishad, and then from other Upanishads too, like this. So the Vedantic teachings there are really taken out from the Upanishads, like this. So what happens? Where are the Upanishads? Where are they coming from? So what is said is, first of all, the text that they're in are the Vedas. That a lot of you are familiar with the Vedas. And the Vedas are possibly the oldest text known to humanity, possibly. I'm not an expert in this, but a lot of people would say so. But in any case, the Vedas, what's said about them is that it's not something that somebody thought up. Kind of like that the theory of relativity isn't something that Einstein cooked up, right? Understood. Laws of nature, you understand them. So these aren't things that the rishis, the seers, had, you know, just figured out in their minds, but they're said to be kind of like transmitters. They say rishi, the root for rishi, the sanskrit root means from vision, to see, visionaries, you can say. So what happens then is not that they, you know, that they made something up, but they discovered. They say mantra drashtaraha, they are the ones who saw the mantras. They didn't, so they just recorded what are the truths behind everything, not that they concocted something. So in this way, this is what they say, where the Vedas came from. Now what happens then is the Vedas are said, because of this, to be apaurusheya, right? Purusha is human. So paurusheya means something that's humanly created. Like your cell phone is humanly created, right? A stent in the heart, humanly created. You know, so humans have made all sorts of amazing things. But a lot of things, but most of the world doesn't come from humans. And actually you can also say what comes from humans, it's also, you know, we're part of nature. We're not part of nature, but that's a whole other story. But in any case, so they're said to be apaurusheya, the Vedas, not something humanly composed, written, just transmitted, like the radio transmits. So, and the interesting thing, we just take the Vedas like this. The later texts, we know who wrote. The Vedas, the rishis, some places we know who the rishi is, right? Titira rishi, so there's Taittiriya Upanishad, and that's part of a whole section of one of the Upanishads, which is Taittiriya, like this. So some of them we know, and some of them they're discussion between certain rishis. So you know it's this rishi. Kathopanishad, it's like Kataka Rishi, something like this is the one who. So then some are known, some are not known. They don't write their names in it. They don't sign their names because they know it's not them. They just transmit it and that's it. So this is the special thing about the Vedas, that it said, and Veda comes from vit, to know. It's knowledge. So it's taken as knowledge, not as something that, something that is humanly put together. Now, one of the reasons for this, as we pointed out in some of the Vedanta classes, is also that knowledge that I put together from my mind, that's going to be based on me as an individual, how much I can grasp my mind, how creative the mind can be. All of these things, it depends on me as an individual. So that is in knowledge built up as an individual, and that's based on an individual. An individual is the based on, as we've studied so far in Vedanta, based on avidya, because I am this, I take myself this body and this mind. Where does it come from? Karana Sharira, which we maybe go a little more in detail in this course, other courses we've talked about, because the Karana Sharira from the Sukshma Sharira, Stula Sharira, the subtle gross bodies will come. And what is that Karana Sharira? It's avidya, it's ignorance. So this one is based on that. Like Swami Dayananji, one thing he says about is, okay, you go and get a PhD in something, meaning on that topic you can answer two or three more questions than somebody else. And the next answer to the next question is, I don't know. Because every physicist, the top physicist in the world, you'll talk about certain things. When it gets a certain point, beyond that, I don't know. Right. What was before Big Bang? What were some ideas on this? Maybe this, maybe this. And why is it like that? I don't know. So the individual knowledge has to be based on that. It can't be not based on I don't know in the end. So the basis, I don't know, avidya. And here it says, so if it's humanly concocted, the base is going to still be avidya, kind of like part of the dream. We're here it's saying this is not part of that. It's transmission from beyond that. And then, so it, this is why it helps to point this out. Now what happens, all humans are struggling in the world, except for maybe, you know, we will say Jivan Muktas, the few that have self-knowledge will say in some way aren't, but in general as a human, we have ups and downs, we have problems, we have difficulties. So the Vedas then, they come about in order to help with this, kind of like self-help book, how do you call it? When you call the help desk? You call the help desk, please help me, right? There's an 800 number when you buy your machine. If there's a problem, call them. like this. So you call as, you know, help desk, you call because you want to call. It's not, they're not going to call you and say, oh, please call the help desk. And, you know, you have a problem, you'll call it. So it's not that it's enforced that you have to do this or you're in trouble. It's up to you. You have a free choice, right? You can choose. It's Sunday morning. You can choose to sleep, to go play golf. I know some people, every Sunday, they climb up this thing right here, Mission Peak. So there's so many options up to you. So you decide to do it like this, up to you. Now, what people are going to come and look for are also different things. And it depends on what we say in Vedantic words, and on the level of depth or level of evolution, like this, very simple. Because, first of all, I'm in trouble, or I want security, or I want to get things to be able to enjoy. So that's one level, so it can help with that. Somebody wants something further, it'll help with that. So two main things that it gives is, one thing is I still have dependent existence, and I want to get something to help with that. Like one of the biggest things in the Vedas, a lot of different rituals and different mantras, everything. Okay, so one can go to heaven. What? I want to go to heaven after this lifetime. Swarga. Swarga, really, heaven, what it means, to get to a better place. That's what I want. Because that's all the illustrations of heaven from any religion, is a better place. That's just people use their imagination to find different ideas of a better place. That's all. Like this. So I want to get to a better place. So it says, okay, you want to get to a better place. Good, here are ways you can get to a better place. Because, you know, do it according to dharma, righteousness. You don't do it according to that, you're going to have repercussions and it's not going to work well. Kind of like the scientists that are working very hard to find vaccine for coronavirus, right? They want to make sure they do it well so there aren't side effects and it'll just backlash. So they want to do it, and scientists that cut corners afterwards, there can be a big backlash because it can be a big problem. So in this way, it says, okay, here are ways you can do, so you can get to that, very good. So we can say like this, the beginner, for the child spiritual aspirant, it's I want to get to somewhere. So good, get to somewhere, no problem. Get to somewhere, here's how you can do it. It'll say, here's how you can do that. Very good. So, but that's still kind of like carrot and stick, right? The child, you'll say, do your homework and I'll take you to the movies, like this. So in this way, one jokingly way that is said about this type of religion, which is very much a mainstream religion, it's kind of like travel agency. They show you the pictures of the place. You have to pay premium by being a good person or doing this ritual or whatever it is. Then, you know, you get. Now, the thing is, the only difference is the travel agency here, if you pay the money and you go and you come back and you complain because the hotel really wasn't very good and it wasn't like they said the place will be, you can sue them or, you know, you can argue and get some money back, right? But this one, they say the heavens like this. The only thing is a prerequisite to get there. You have to die first, so it's too late. You can't do anything about the travel agency anymore. But in any case, this is first level. Now, second level is, yes, I want to grow. I want to get to something further. This isn't enough, like this. So then somebody looks a little bit further. Okay, let me find the God. Let me find something else. And then somebody looks for something to help them, something better than this, better than just getting some limited thing. And then eventually the highest level will be not for depending on something, but I want to be independent. Because the other ones, all the other stepping stones on the way, it's dependency. I'm dependent on situation. I want a better situation. Or I want more security, something like this. I feel that I'm not full. Apurnatvam, na purnaha. From next class, the mantra at the beginning, purnaha. What we're looking for is fullness, completeness. So at first I'm looking for it in situations, in security, then somewhere outside, from some God outside too. So good, step by step. But afterwards, none of these are going to totally do it. Vedanta is saying, you know, you have to have that. You are that purna, you just don't know where to search for it, how to look for it like this. So in this way, it gives. For the different people, it will give what's needed according to their level. But then it's kind of like, you know, for the child, one thing is needed. For the teenager, for this, something different needed depending on the level. So depending on the level of where I'm at, it'll give to me too. Like this, it's totally fine. So in general, the Vedas, they're broken into two main parts. We say karmakanda and jnanakanda, the portion for karma, for active action, and portion for knowledge. Where that part is very small, the jnanakanda, the Upanishads, is very small. Because what happens is, an interesting thing, when I want to do something, I want to, then the action is based on me, the individual. Because I'm doing it, so I can do it in so many different ways. Like now we had our Sanskrit class, and okay, so learning certain charts of declensions. Very good. So we studied in a specific way. Shida looked online. She found a different way she did that way to memorize it. I didn't know it that way, but it's the same chart in the end. So when you read something, you can understand. Very good. So it's another way to do it. No problem. So to do depends on individual. You know, we'll have a vegetable garden. Okay, grow vegetables. We'll all grow the same vegetables. Each one is going to design differently, do differently. It'll all work fine. So action is, we say, Purusha Tantra, depending on the individual. But then knowledge is very different. Knowledge is Vastu Tantra, means depends on the object itself. Like we say this thing, I have an object here. So the object, they are glasses, and that's what it is. It is glasses. It's not something else. Whatever language you use, whatever, you know, wherever you come from, in the end, it's the same. The knowledge of it, it's the same thing. It's one thing. You know, you'll build it differently, use it differently. But knowledge is just the one thing. So that's one of the reasons Upanishads is much more terse. And also, action can be for so many different things. But knowledge is, self-knowledge is one thing, one simple thing, and that's it. So that's why there's not so much more elaboration there. Possibly also, people have so many different desires for different things. So good, all the desires for things that are okay. Okay, good. So different ways to get to it, no problem. And then if I keep going, looking for a keep going, then slowly I will get tired of it. Because how much can I already, no matter how much I get. So that's why if somebody really has desire to do things, get to things, great. Let them work hard for it. Let them do as much as they can. Slowly, we grow. We grow, we find, okay, I got so much. What's next? How much more can I get? Right? I put so much effort, I get, and then what? Or it's never total, and if I really look at it, it'll never totally satisfy me. So when somebody really looks at it slowly, they grow, vairagya grows, and they see that's not going to totally satisfy me. So then one slowly goes more towards Vedanta like this. So this is, they say like this, that they say Shruti Mata, they say the Shruti, the Veda is like the mother, because she's taking care of everybody, you know, earlier on and later on, like this gives what we need, not just what, and again, according to what the child's needs are, that she has a small child or she has one that's going to college, they have different needs. So according to the needs like this, where they're at, you can't give them the same thing in this way. So this is something so they don't contradict, because somebody will say it contradicts. In one place it says, yes, do this kind of worship and, you know, work hard, you'll go to the heaven. Other place it's saying that's useless, right? You know, what are we study about Nachiketas, right? Those who were in Kathopanishad. Well, he said, no matter all you give me, long life and all the wealth, all the pleasures, all this, before I know it'll be gone and then what? So how is that going to be useful for me? I'm not interested in it. So in this way, it also puts that aside. So it's very similar, you know. When you go in sixth grade, I made a model with my father that I brought into school of an atom. I don't remember which atom it was some years ago, but with ping pong balls of different colors for the nucleus and for everything around. Oh, wow, this is what an atom looks like for a sixth grader, right? Somebody who's a graduate student studying subatomic physics is going to know it's very different than that. But for the sixth grader, that's enough. So similarly like this. So in any case, so in the Vedas, we have those two parts. And Vedanta, we're studying the latter part. We say it's really like two different texts. Because personally, the Veda Purva, Vedanta, Veda Purva, the previous portion, the latter portion. So I know not a lot about, you know, some suktam, some of the prayers, which are very nice for Upasana in this, but then because the preparation, again, can be done so many ways, as long as you do karma yoga, because what is the preparation? Karma yoga. You want to do, slowly unbind yourself from the gravity of individual by thinking something broader and not being attached just everything I'm doing, caught up in the action. So learn not to be caught up result, do the actions as an offering. So it helps to, you know, make the gravity lighter, that it's not grabbing me as much, expand the vision. Then Upasana, some sort of discipline is needed on the one hand, and then having a broader vision as well. Because Upasana, learning how to change my vision, the first one is through directly through action, directly through, so it has to do with physical activity. Upasana, more how my outlook, how will my outlook be more subtle, more expansive. So that's the whole idea, the whole thing of the thinking of the God in one way or the other. I need some form so I can focus on it. And then slowly, what is it? What is the meaning of it? Because beginning, Vedas has the rituals, and then later it also has what is the meaning? What is the meaning of the mantras? More subtle, right? Like those people do worship, they chant Purusha Suktam, Narayana Suktam. But if they really start looking what it's saying, right, then antarbahishchatat sarvam vyapyanarayanasthitaha. They're worshipping Vishnu. And it's saying this one is in everything, right? Outside of everything, in, you know, all pervading. If the mind starts thinking of it, it's a little different than just, you know, let me worship this form here, and that's the all-powerful, and he'll just, you know, he'll help me to get somewhere. So slowly to expand the vision, because we have to grow, and then growing slowly, as we grow, we can let go more and more, and then we want to see, well, what is it eventually behind, like this. So karma, yoga, upasana, and later, jnana, the Vedanta, like this. So Vedanta, Veda, Antaha, the latter part of Veda, or what we say in Vedanta, it's not meaning necessarily physically it has to be later there, but it's what is the essence. Tatparya is the essence, what is the purport. So we say Vedanta, the purport of the Vedas. What are they really pointing at? So it's not what we learned in the, you know, in the nursery school, the first to sixth grade. It's what, you know, really, if somebody wants physics, what they really, you know, the advanced studies, what is really being pointed out, the subtler. What is, I'm studying medicine, not the chemistry I learned when I was in eighth grade, you know, but what is, you know, what I study in medical school. So what is, the others are preparation. So this is saying it's the main essence, purport, what the Vedas are pointing out, which this is the essence then. So that's the Vedanta, or the Upanishad is on this, focusing on this. So the Upanishads then are, there's the word Upanishad, right? And this word then, there's the, it's breaking, it comes from three different, two prefixes and one word, Upa, Ni, and Shat, like this. This is what it is, Upanishat. Like in our Sanskrit, we talked, it became a sha instead of a sa. Those are in the Sanskrit class. So what happens then is upa means near, close by, like this. So that's one reason why upa, it's studied close, they say, like this. That you, their teachers, I know they, you know, they don't like to do like this through a media like this, because they feel it's never, we'll never do the same. But I know some of them that are like that are even teaching in this way nowadays because there isn't another option. So the ones that didn't like video or cast like this, because it's very different. Human interaction is very different than you get it from other things. So upa, ni is from nishchaya. Nishchaya is surely. Nishchatmika means completely surely, you know, doubtlessly in this way. And sat, the root there can mean a few different things here. So two of the meanings that are given for it, one is visharanam. Visharanam means to loosen. What happens is if you have something stuck in the ground, you know, you're digging in the garden because you want to make a hole there for something. And as you dig, there's a big stone stuck in there. You don't pull it out all at once. You go around and you loosen it up, right? So in this way, it's for loosening, because what happens is when I start looking at myself, then what happens is I feel that I'm bound. That's the problem. We say that I'm bound, I'm limited. I don't want to be bound. Nothing in nature wants to be bound, right? Any animal, you just block its way. I know, you know, when I find a spider or something in the house, I want to catch and put it outside. It doesn't want to be caught. It wants to run away because it doesn't want to be bound. Even, you know, I tell them, don't worry, I'm going to put you aside, you have so much more room, but I don't know spider language, so, and even if I knew, he might not trust me. So then they try to run away, because they don't want to be bound, they don't want to be hurt. So none of us want to be bound at all like this. So we want to loosen that. And so what happens, though, is Vedanta is saying, okay, you're bound. What does it mean you're bound? What is binding you? Oh, it's the country, and it's the, my family, how they're treating me, and the society, blah, 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 blah. But in the end, Vedanta says, well, if you really look at it, in the end, yeah, it's true, physically bound, but physically you can't be unbound. If you want to be physically unbound, forget it. Not possible. You know, you're depending on the air, you're depending on the food, what do you mean? Everything, the body is part of the world, so that you won't be. But psychologically bound, that's what happens. Psychologically, then, psychological is my own mind. Because the masters, they live in the world just like you and me. They're not living somewhere else. They're not living, you know, on the moon or something, right here in the society. But the difference is the psychological dependence. The Swami Tattvedananda Ji, I know well. He is coming and teaching a course here in Pennsylvania now, because there it's a little bit more open. So they can limit to certain people, because they always have two-month course with them. Certain people and social distancing, it all very, but they'll do. So in any case, so what happens then is this binding then, we say, is just, you know, from the mind. From this, how I look at it, it's not from something else. I hold that, so then I think I'm bound. So it's really, it's the problem that I have in my mind. So that has to be pointed out like this. This is what Vedanta is saying, that's really where the issue is coming from, like this. So it helps to look at that. So it helps to loosen it up, because what happens is I need to loosen up my thinking. That's what does it. When I have a stiff thinking about something, I think it's from something else. When I just loosen it up a little bit, it gives me more wiggling room, and then I'm more free. So really, it's an understanding. That's why it's jnana yoga. It's through understanding, not through karma, not action. Because any action I do will do something, and then what? Of course, the action, it's not that it doesn't do anything. You know, it can help. If I'm depressed and I just sit there and I want to look into myself, it won't work. If I get up and I run or I talk to somebody or do something, it'll pull me out of the depression, pull me out of the negative state. So it has its place. But to get to the bottom in the end, it's the understanding, unclarity. So this is why why Vedanta is like this. So it loosens up this and shakes up. What happens also is one of the things that binds me then within that, the subtler parts of the thoughts that are binding me are my doubts. Because I hear certain things, even I have a problem with something. And then somebody says, oh, try to do this, it'll help. Why don't I just try it? If I totally trusted it, I would do it. I have doubts about it. So Vedanta points out, you're this one, but I have doubts about it. So Vedanta helps to slowly shake those up. Shake them up so that they're not as binding. So that's one thing, right? Visharanam. Then there's avasadhanam, I believe. Yeah, avasadhanam is another meaning for the sat. Avasadhanam means to destroy, completely annihilate. So this one, to totally destroy my ignorance about myself, right? And it's a very different type of ignorance. That's why it's not something you just take up a book and read and, oh, it's this, okay, I'm that. You read? Yes, I'm not the body and I'm not the mind. I'm the witnessing awareness, which is unlimited consciousness. Oh, I'm that. Okay, done. Very easy. You know, it's like somebody getting up, finding a piece of paper. What is all of this stuff? E equals mc squared. This is all energy. Okay, it's energy. Very good. Okay, I'm very happy. Now I can go about my day. It takes a lot more to look into like this, but the knowledge itself, eventually, to destroy this ignorance altogether. Because I want the freedom. I want to, if somebody wants to be free from something, within a prison, they want to break out of it, totally break the bondage. They don't want to be partially free. They'll say, okay, I'll settle for a bigger cell and internet connection. That's good enough. They won't settle for that, right? They want to be fully free. I'll tell the spider that I'm catching, okay, you know what? I'll catch you. I won't catch you completely. I'll just catch you from one leg. The rest of you is free. He'll say, no, I don't want to be like that. I don't want you to catch me at all. So what happens then? Helps to totally destroy this ignorance of myself. That's the other meaning of the Upanishad. So Upanishad, so that which, right, which brings you closer to what? To yourself, right? And complete, you know, doubtless, brings the doubtless knowledge that then first helps to shake up the doubts and then totally destroy all these doubts about myself. And the doubts are really, there's some confusion there. And then the whole process is, first of all, pointing what it is, what Vedanta is saying. And then slowly we have to churn it in order to see what is the gap between the two things that I have in front of me. I have two things in front of me. I'm the unlimited, right? Unlimited, unchanging reality. And I'm this limited body mind that is victim of circumstance. And then there's a big gap. So to slowly see what is it that is creating this gap? Why do I? What are the doubts there? So the churning, sharavanam mananam, sharavanam mananam mostly, nidhityasanam too, but sharavanam mananam, sharavanam to explain the two, mananam to really churn to, see what is it that is making, what is conflicting between them, and why is it conflicting? Why is it really not a conflict like this? And then helps to destroy that. So this is what the Upanishad is in general, like this. So the Upanishads, the Vedas themselves, there are four Vedas. Many of you are familiar. There are four of them. And one of them has two main branches. The Vedas were, as we said, Rishis just, they're, what they knew, they had there and is passed down orally. There used to be a lot more information, but a lot of it was lost because when it's passed down orally, then it doesn't always make it after some time, even if it's written. Vedavyasa then compiled it, took these, compiled into the four Vedas. And they're broken, as we said, mostly into these different two major sections like this. Two major sections, actually, Upanishad, small one. Two major sections is Mantra Samhita and the Brahmanam, first part, second part, in general. And what happens is, most of the Upanishads sit in the latter part, in Brahmana. Most of them are like this. Ishavasya is at the end of the Mantra Samhita, which usually isn't the place for Upanishads, usually. And then there are many Karmakandis, meaning those who are into the worship, into the activity like this, that take it as just part of a worship. And that's why when we'll start studying, we'll see how Shankara, Adiguru Shankaracharya, in his commentary, he clarifies why it can't be that. Because it's very important for him to, in the context, when he writes a commentary on it, to explain why it's Vedantic and why it's not for the other part. Because for the other part, for Vedanta, it's not as useful like this. And we'll discuss that more later. But in any case, so it's what's called the Mantra Upanishad. Mantra Upanishad because it's in the Mantra Samhita section, that's one reason, and also because it's more terse, where you have the Brahmana Upanishads, most of them, and a lot of them will be more expansive. So what happens, a lot of the scholars say there's the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is in the same, they're both in the Shukla Yajurveda. They're Yajurveda is one of the four Vedas. It has two main branches, like, you know, two different versions, or written differently. And both of these are in that version, in the Shukla Yajurveda. And in that one, both are there. One is it, and the Brihadaranyaka, they say, is much more expansive. This is the same information, much more terse. There are a few cases like this where it's the pair. They say this is the terse one, this is the more general one. Like, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, Mundaka and Prashna works like that, those that are familiar. So in the Upanishads themselves, actually, as we said, there used to be so many, which many are lost. I've heard it, some people say 108, some say 200. Upanishads we have now, something like this. Of these Upanishads, there are 10 that in many schools, like school of Vedanta, they'll say, like where I study, they say there are 10 major Upanishads. And 10 major ones, not that these ones have the teachings the other ones don't. The Upanishad in general has these teachings, because actually the Upanishad itself, because of the meaning that we describe in the word, the direct meaning means Brahmavidya, Atmavidya, self-knowledge. That's what Upanishad is. The text is a secondary thing. That which is a text which points this out. Just like when you study physics, you study chemistry, you study history, you have a book on it. The book isn't history or chemistry or physics. The book is pointing that out so you can learn and understand it. So the book here isn't the Upanishad, but the book, secondarily it is. But what it's pointing out is, really, that's what it is, the knowledge. Because, again, when you learn something, when you really understand it, then, you know, the book isn't needed. Just like Krishna says in the Gita, that just like when there's a flood, right? There's a flood water everywhere. And I say, do you have a pot of water? Can I come to your house? Do you have a pot of water I can have? You'll say, what do you mean? Take water anywhere you want, like this. So similarly, all these scriptures, somebody who has the self-knowledge, it's not, you know, like I know, I want to get to the BART station from here. I want to know to get to there. So I use a map or I ask you or something. Once I know to get there, well, I don't need a map. I know where it is done. So similarly like this. But in any case, so the 10 major Upanishads, they're called the major ones for a few reasons. One reason is when you study them, it gives you the full picture of what Vedanta is saying. So that's enough, because literally one studied well points it out. But, you know, but still studying what these give different angles and fill in gaps that you might not see in some. So it gives you enough. Now, Swami Paramarthanandaji in Chennai, one of the most brilliant disciples, Swami Dayananji, he teaches a course, he teaches six. He says this is enough in this. Because actually two of them, Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka, are very voluminous, very, very big. One of Swami Dayananda's disciples, a visitor once, 4 or 5 days, he gave us morning talks. One verse from Brihadaranyaka, like every day, an hour or so, hour and a half, 4 or 5 days. And then he said, we did it quickly. It'll take a month in our ashram. Because the thing is, you want to study the depth of it, because it's not something that you just skim over. I know a little bit, let me go to the next thing. Because you want, it's in order to understand something, to look in. So the thing is, most usually in courses, those aren't studied as much, or portion is studied, because it's just too voluminous. And it's also not all necessary for the knowledge, like to get self-knowledge. So they're very voluminous. Some are much more terse. This one is much one of the most terse ones. This one, Ishavasya, 18 verses, very terse. So you have different ones like this. So in any case, these 10 ones, so they give the picture, number one. Number two, we have commentary of Adi Guru Shankara on these 10. And commentary is very important because what happens, it's very subtle ideas. And just reading directly won't do it. Even grammatically, it's different than, we study Sanskrit now, it's different than our Sanskrit now, before it was codified by Panini. So some people do know and study the Vedic Sanskrit, but it's different. And it doesn't, since it doesn't follow the grammatical rules without knowing it really, that's why it's passed down, somebody teaches, because otherwise it won't all be, you can't all grasp it directly from there. That's why they, and so his bhashya, his commentary is very helpful because it helps to clarify and to point everything out like this. So that's another reason why there are 10 major ones, we say. The last reason also is when studying Vedanta, there are three main texts, the three core texts for it, not the, we said the Prakarana Granthas. Prakaranas, the different texts that that show the different methodologies or points around it, expand on different ideas from it. The three main ones will be first Bhagavad Gita, and then this is more introductory, then the Upanishads, which go more to the essence, and then Brahma Sutra. Brahma Sutra usually is after somebody studies the Upanishads, one would study that. And that one is clarifying any subtle intellectual doubts like this. So a lot, Vedavyasa also wrote the Brahma Sutras. And what happens is he refers to a lot of the ideas in the Upanishads in these, and mostly in these ones. So then you have the information whenever he quotes or something, one would know and know what he's discussing in there. So this is the reason why 10 major ones. There's a verse that tells of these 10 major ones. It starts with Isha, Isha Kena, and it goes through a list. So in some schools, they'll teach Ishavasya Upanishad first. They'll do it in that order. But at least Swami Dayananda's school, many schools, they don't teach it first, because they say it's not as simple a one, not as easy. Why? Because it's terse. And one of the reasons also is other ones, they'll have more context or discussion, and they'll take it usually from known to unknown, from Jiva to Ishvara, because God or all-pervading, you don't know, but individually you have some idea about, you're dealing with the individual all the time. So slowly. Here it takes a lot for granted. You already have so much information, you already know so much more background needed to get into it. So that's why we haven't taken a first. We've done so many other texts like this. But it's one that I'm familiar with. That's one of the reasons I took it up. One of the other reasons I personally took it up for this, both I'm familiar, I learned it with teacher, and also teaching in this manner, I didn't want to start a longer Upanishad that we're going to sit for a year, first one through the internet like this. I thought it wasn't, I didn't want to get into that. We might do after this. We did Kathopanishad, next maybe Mundaka or Keno Upanishad. We'll do those in the future, but in this context, I chose like this. Now, different Upanishads are named differently, all these names. This one, Isha, because it starts with Isha Vasyamidam Sarvam. That's in the first verse. Starts with Isha. That's why it's called Isha Vasya. They get their names for different reasons, but that's the reason that this one has this specific name, like this. Isha Vasyamidam Sarvam Yavt Kincha Jagat Yam Jagat Tena Chaktena Bunjitaha Magradaha Kasya Swiddhanam. First verse out of 18. This week I'll share our shared folder. I'll share with everybody the text and everything. Then you have it like this, and in this way. So in this the study that we'll do is we'll take a lot of the ideas that are in the Shankara Bhashya. We won't go directly through it because some of the things will be whether grammatical thing or something that won't be, I think, as pertinent, one hand. And the other hand also, it's without going through it in the Sanskrit, if you read it just in the English, when he's talking about the word, why he said it like this and not like this, it won't make much sense without the language. And because, you know, most of us aren't studying Sanskrit in this, it's not going to be very useful. But most of the important ideas from there we'll bring in when we go through and study this one, this Upanishad like this. So this is in general a few things about what is studied. Now, one thing with the Upanishads, with Vedanta, how it teaches, one of the main important things about the methodology, it uses a context. You need a context in order to see something, understand something. Kind of like when there's a child and you want to teach them to count, it's abstract, very hard for them. So you give them, you know, okay, if you have three chocolates and I give you two more chocolates, you have some context that then it's easier. Actually, this is usually what's done in Prakarana Granthas, make it easier for us to grasp, or Puranas or this. Upanishad doesn't have as much, it is context, but subtler context, like this. Some context, because without the context and point something out. Viveka, you have a context, you're discriminating one thing from the other. Atma and Atma Viveka, right? Pancha Kosha Viveka. Because just to look directly, okay, this is what I am. I'm the consciousness. What do you mean by that? Well, it's not the body. Okay, so what is there? It's the mind. No, it's not the mind. Like this. Something to do Viveka with. Otherwise, what do you point out? So this way, some context is used, is needed. Otherwise, hard to point out. And this is one thing. In this Upanishad, the parts talking about Atma in this, there isn't any context, so we have to add the context. That's one reason why this is a subtle one like this, a Upanishad that doesn't give it. You know, the other one that we had studied, other ones, they give a little bit more like this. So that's the reason. But the Upanishads are studied like this directly with the original text for the reason of where it came from. Then we're, you know, studying directly, which are directly how the rishis put this forth in their thought, which is just, that's why just chanting them is really wonderful. But then, of course, the meaning is the important thing. So taking it from there, and then, because we could just take a translation of something and just run with that, but this is usually done because of this, because let us use the original, the text that they put, that the rishi that saw this vision, put it there and help unfold and understand that vision from how they wrote it down like this and how it's been explained like this. And what happens, the nice thing about this, then if you keep studying, then later when you go back to it, you read and with you remember the commentary, and then the words themselves are pointing to that, and much without all the commentary around, just the words themselves, then okay, this is pointing to that whole thing, like a sutra that much shorter, condensed, that is pointing up. So these are a few things about this. Most of you have been coming to class some time, so you're familiar with how we've been doing. And you know, this probably within 3 months, I think, we'll cover, because, again, it's not a very extensive one. Within 3 months maximum, I think. Let's see. Because, again, this is how I learned, and which at first was interesting to me, but I got used to it, where you take up the text and you study it well. So we know around the amount of time it takes. It's not that if we say we're going to do it in 8 classes and this in the first classes and second class, then it won't do the same thing. So something like, it'll be roughly like that, and I'm sure we'll get a lot from it. So that's a small introduction about this. Next week we'll introduce the Shanti Mantra for it, that one that we're familiar with, and we'll start going into the text itself. So let's finish for today. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.